on this episode of Optimal Health Uncovered.
Let's say it's our listeners' first marathon. What's your golden piece of advice?
Get to the start healthy.
Welcome to Optimal Health Uncovered, Marathon Mondays edition. I'm Britt Gunzer.
And I'm Brendan Copley.
Once again, we want you to think of us as your post-race banana, but before the race, helping you to prepare for your fall race as best as possible. Today, we're chatting with Heather Peck, mother, wife, runner, coach, friend, cheerleader to many. Heather is a five-time age group winner at the Boston Marathon and has an insatiable hunger to improve and help others improve. Heather is the grand finale to our Marathon Monday series, as she's the embodiment of what we have been talking about the past 4 months.
Yeah, when I was in college, my coach would always harp on us and let us know that our competition was all doing essentially similar programs. Like, there was always different like tidbits here or there. Maybe you'd be focusing on one goal or another. But what would really differentiate us was some of those smaller little things that you would do outside of your training plan that would help differentiate us and set us apart. And I feel like Heather is definitely the main person that like brings all of those things together and has proven that if those things are done, that you can really truly be successful. And Britt and I are obviously huge fans and know a lot about kind of your story as a runner. But for anyone that doesn't know, would you be able to share just sort of a brief history of your story with running?
My story with running begins really honestly in 2003 with the passing of my father. I'd run off and on in my life. I ran 2 years cross country in high school unsuccessfully. I ran in my 30s a little bit here and there, largely for just health and fitness. And I was, you know, having children and working. It was a great way when I traveled to be able to do something for myself. But when my father passed away, he passed away running. And I really came to running to work through my grief. No other purpose than that. I grew up in a ski racing family. We were multi-sport athletes. I just was running as a way to connect and a way to also have some time with myself that was productive. And I still find that running gives me that. It gives me space. It gives me clarity. It gives me uninterrupted time to think, and I really that's a gift. And you can find it in swimming and walking and other various ways. I found it in running. I started running in 2003 and spent quite a bit of time just running, nothing more than that. I could argue that those years were the development of an aerobic engine, and probably really, really good for me. I made a lot of mistakes as I look back in my early running, but I wasn't running for any purpose other than to be able to, as I said, work through my grief and connect with myself. So fast forward, 2009 was the 25th anniversary of my father's running of the New York City Marathon. And I started training. And that was really the first time that I was training. And I followed a training plan that I found online. Wasn't obviously customized to me. Made some mistakes along the way, which I won't even get into. But I tore my gastrocnemius in three places in September of 2009, with New York being the first weekend in November. I tore it in three places. I was brought to my knees. I couldn't walk. My foot actually landed, the front of my foot landed on the ground and the back landed into a pothole. And everything just tore. I was told that I wouldn't run New York. I didn't like that answer. And I was committed to doing everything that I could to make sure that I would run New York. I shut myself down for 6 weeks. I did all the things. I learned a lot really quickly in how to rest, and that our body has an amazing ability to darn itself back together when we give it rest. When we're treated with the right people and we do the things that we are supposed to do. I was put on a treadmill the week before, about seven. It might have been 10 days. Memory escapes me now, but I was put on a treadmill for, I don't know, 20 minutes, something like that. And I ran pain-free. 4 days before the race, I went up and ran some trails, and not technical trails, like just soft ground, soft surface. I went to the starting line of New York. And that was it. I had had my last training run in September when I injured myself. All I can remember of that race is, this is hard. When I hit the bridge off of First Avenue, coming at the end of First Avenue into Harlem, I had this enormous, overwhelming, recognition that I had never run that far before in my life. And that I still had a long way to go. The 22nd mile, the climb up First Avenue before you go back into the park, I saw Jesus, God, and everybody else. It was really hard. And I crossed the finish line, and still to this day, it is by far my most memorable marathon. And I really honestly could not believe that I had covered the distance. I still can feel those feels, and it was one and done. It was the 25th anniversary of my dad, and it wasn't one and done, and it changed my life.
Certainly not. Yeah. So take us a little bit from there. Talk yourself up a little bit.
Well, so that was 2009. I qualified for Boston. I had no idea what that was. Zero. Guys, you have to remember, I was just doing this to be with my dad on the 25th anniversary of his running. I qualified for Boston. I didn't do anything until I registered for Boston, because everybody told me I had to go to Boston. So I went to Boston. Boston is magical. Boston is wonderful. They all are, but Boston is special to me. After 2011, I started running a little bit more seriously. I was still in corporate America. And if I got 20 to 30 miles in during the week, broken 2 miles, maybe before I went to work, and, you know, 2 or 3 miles after, in the dark with a headlamp, it still scares me that I did that. But anyway, and then I would run long on the weekends. And I would, you know, I would do a long run one day, and then maybe I'd do an 8 and 10 the other day, and that would be the mileage. So, you know, 50 was huge if I got there, and I don't even really think I did. I think it was probably closer to 40. Did that for, you know, a couple of years. I started to work with, I retired in 2013. I started to work with young athletes, and started to take the training a little bit more seriously. And during that time, I found that I was getting faster. I was placing higher. I went from 40th to 20th to top 10 at Boston, kind of thing. And in 2017, I won my first Boston. I got really smart about how to run the course. I got smarter about how to take care of my body. I got smarter in the training. I figured out that food and fuel was our friend in endurance events.
And now here we are.
And now here we are.
So here we are. Running is very often thought about as a solo sport, but for you, I don't think it is. You're part of a huge community. So when did you start to build that community, and when did you realize that you wanted to be part of more of a community?
I would say that was probably around 2016. I started working, as I said, with young adults. I started some summer camps. I started to work holistically with them. So running isn't just running. Running is great, and you need to run, and you need to run a lot. But you need to do a lot of other things. So, you know, no different than, you know, soccer or football or baseball. You just don't throw the ball all day long. So I started to build some camps, and we worked on mobility and pliability at plyos, and we worked on strength, largely body weight because they were young adults. We worked on nutrition. We worked on mindset. I brought in a sports psychologist to work with them. We just built, you know, sort of having them understand the why and the science of what they were doing, understanding how different, training periodizations would result in and how the seasons built for them, and rest and recovery, and really that was the magic. Stress plus rest equals adaptations, and having them just sort of understand all of what that meant, and just having a cooler of chocolate milk at the end and making sure that they got, protein carbohydrate mix, quickly, making sure that they were fueling appropriately before a long run. And then I started working with some adults, and the more I started working with people, the more people came to me locally, which has been wonderful. I have group runs, and I have a lot of athletes in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, that come together. And that's, it's amazing for me that they come together, that they support each other, that they are committed, and that they're part of my team. I'm enormously grateful.
That's awesome.
I feel like there's no better feeling than feeling like you're bigger than, or you're part of something that's bigger than just yourself too.
Yeah.
So at Performance, we tend to break our overall health into four different pillars. So we have exercise, nutrition, stress management, and then your recovery. You've already touched on pretty much all four of these, but in little glimpses. I wonder if it would be helpful if we kind of broke things down a little bit systemically, so that you could just sort of talk general philosophy and things that have worked well for you, or things that you've helped coach athletes on.
And lessons you've learned, because you've been doing this and you've been successful at it. So it's helpful for our listeners to hear how you landed on the nutrition that you do now versus where you started at 20 years ago, that kind of thing.
So if you don't mind me interjecting already here, okay, do you mind if we start with rest and recovery? And you've mentioned it a couple times, but I think that's probably sometimes the vaguest of like what you can like legitimately do from a framework standpoint and how that's helpful.
Okay. I think it's really important for our body to rest. What that means is highly individualized. So rest can be active recovery. Rest can be 100% rest. Rest can be cross-training. Rest is obviously sleep. If I told you the top 10 things that you needed to do to perform at your optimal, it would be number one, sleep, number two, sleep, number three, sleep, and then we'd get to the others. So, allowing our bodies to restore and to absorb and then adapt. When we run, we stress our body, we create inflammation. We need to bring that down. One of the things that I find is that we runners are very type A. We don't want to not run. We don't want to slow down. We don't want to take a day off. And I live in a glass house. I've learned over the years that a day off is really good. I'm taking one today. That running slow is how you run fast. Winning workouts and winning easy days and Strava are really dangerous. I can't stress it enough that they're dangerous. The reality is we should be running 2 to 3 minutes slower on an easy day. I have a lot of athletes that have a really hard time with that concept, they just don't understand. You should not only be able to hold a conversation, you should be able to sing Britney Spears, "Let's Do It Again."
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Thank you. Britney Spears, Hit Me One More Time, full lyrics at the top of your lungs while you're still running. So it should be fun. I highly recommend find a group of friends that maybe are slower than you are. It will add to your life. And if that doesn't work, take your dog. If that doesn't work, call your mother. I can give you a lot of ways to run slower. But it's just really, really good for your body. So, and then there are various ways of cross training. Some I think are better than others. Swimming is terrific. Get in the pool, swim, water, jog. It's really good for your breathing. It's really good for your biomechanics. It is non-weight bearing. It's amazing. I'm a huge fan of the Elliptigo or the elliptical. Elliptigo is about as close as you can get to running. So I use mine, 3-4 times a week. So that becomes a great, resource. Bike, a lot of people are doing the Peloton, but again, any of these things should be non-interval, non-workout. You should just be going on 30, 40 minutes, not even 45 to 60 on a rest day, but, go on for 30 minutes, move your legs around a little bit, go for a walk, take a friend and grab a cup of coffee and go for a walk. Read a book. My daughter asked me the other weekend what I wished I'd done. I did more, and it would be read. Take time and take the running time and just convert it into something else.
I love it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, harp on rest that just means lay in bed all day, which can also be detrimental really if you're not moving. So the small things, I know I've worked that in the past couple of years. I even used to just take a total day off after my long run day, and now I don't anymore. And you can just see how your fitness changes, which is really cool. So let's hop to nutrition.
Yeah,
shall we?
So
you mentioned that. So can you talk about how your nutrition during training specifically has changed in the past 20 years as you become more experienced?
Well, it's changed a lot. I think I don't even know if I got one gel in that first.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I don't even know if I did. I probably did. I know my first Bostons were maximum of two. I mean, it was just largely because they just are gross, and I wouldn't even say what I was eating back then, but they were just, but I also think that I wasn't training my gut. So I wasn't ready for it. So I think that there's a variety of things that go into nutrition and fueling, and those are two different things. So nutrition is what we do so that we can train, so that we can actually build towards a goal race, whether that's a marathon or something else. We periodize a build, and we're getting stronger. We're probably running more volume, and we're definitely running more intensity or longer intervals at intensity. To do that, we need to calorie up. So that's one piece, and making sure that the timing of that and what that content is, which I'm happy to go into from a very generic standpoint. But then there's the fueling piece, which is what we do during our runs. And any run really that's over 60 minutes, in my humble opinion, should be fueled. So I went out yesterday, and my run was 70 minutes. And I made sure that I had the proper mix of, carbohydrate before I went out, and then I timed it right so that, my gut reacted properly. I had a workout, and I took a gel during that workout, just one, 30 grams, just because I was going to be out there for more than 60 minutes. So I think it's really important. Then post-run, coming down to a mix of protein and carbohydrate, and to get that in within 30 minutes, ideally, and to really make that a practice. I think the 60 is an old mindset. So to run properly on the kind of run we're talking about in the training for marathon, you really need 3 grams per kilo before you go on your run. That's what you need. There's a lot of data and new science out to support these numbers that I'm going to give you. That's a lot. That's hard. It takes time. I have athletes that are right now training for New York and training for CIM that are where I was years ago, that they maybe have had a gel or two or maybe zero. We're working towards the gel contest. We're not there yet, but we're working towards it. So in somebody like that, we're trying 45 minutes in the run, every 45 minutes. And we're going to build towards every 30. My seasoned athletes are now gelling every 25 minutes.
Awesome.
So it's 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrates an hour is the new science. Mm-hmm. It's not 50. It's not less than 50. So you need to find a fuel source that either supports that carbohydrate. Some of those packages are bigger and harder to carry. Some of them don't have an appropriate mix of sodium. So you need to, you know, again, there's a lot of factors, and I'm not a nutritionist. I actually recommend that you work with a dietitian. I recommend that everybody do that. You don't have to do it for forever. Do it so that you understand what your macros are, what your micro, you know, just so you understand what your needs are, because it's all individualized. And then you can go from there. I'm giving you some very generic numbers. So my recommendation is that you actually move up the rhythm of how you are gelling, because that still keeps you in a package that is manageable to hold, to carry, and so forth, and to carry those gels with you. Don't rely on the course. These are some mistakes also mm-hmm. that are made. Make sure you have your gels on you. Make sure that you take them. Our bodies are clocks. Do not take them by miles. You will be dead wrong. Mm. You take them every 25 to 30 minutes, and you start early. You do not want your glycogen stores to dip. The mistake many people make is they don't take them until they feel that they need them. You're done. It's over.
Yep.
And then following that, so I do a mix. I eat and I drink calories before I run, because I can't eat at all. So again, it's you and what works for you. Some people can eat the stack of pancakes and that's great. I typically do, a bagel or an English muffin. I do nut butter. I do some honey. And then I drink, a carbohydrate drink, and I usually drink that 30 to 40 minutes before, and I eat usually 60 to 90 minutes before my run. So I have a sort of rhythm there. Then in run, we talked about 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrates as it relates to the marathon. And then post-run, you want to have a protein carbohydrate mix that to me is a minimum of 40 grams of protein. Women need more protein than men. Mm-hmm. Aging women need even more. So I need a lot. I need a shit ton. You want to get that in 30 minutes is really the ideal window. So, you know, again, a lot of this is stacking what I call healthy habits.
Yep.
And just, we're creatures of habits. So if we start to say that I'm going to do heel raises when I go upstairs, and I'm going to go to the blender the minute I walk in the house and not go up to the laundry room and go to the bathroom and go to do whatever, the shower or so forth. I go straight to my blender. Then I do the other stuff.
Nice.
That's been game changing for me. Mm-hmm. It you know, again, it's really simple. And for some reason, we make it really hard.
You just have to do it.
I don't know why when you said train your gut, I truly was picturing you like small intestines just bench pressing like crazy, like just getting in the zone. Like, but it's true. You really do have to, one, train your gut to be able to take on more of those calories, and then as you're running specifically, and then train your habits to be able to fit the goals of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
So I'm with you.
So being intentional is really important. And what I saw, I was in Budapest last week, and being on the course at bottle placement for the marathon, both the women's and the men's, what was so clear was the athletes that either missed their bottle, took one sip and threw their bottle, dropped their bottle, those were the athletes that did not race well and didn't finish. And it was just so clear. The top 10 took their bottles, every single bottle, and they drank the 6 to 8 ounces, and they gelled. They did all of the above. So my first really successful marathon, I consumed over 700 calories in that race. I weigh 110 pounds. So there are people out there that are calling it food doping. I kind of think it is.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I mean, there's a couple pieces we're talking about. I mean, the rest is really important. Managing fatigue, not overtraining. And then we can talk in a minute about hydration, because that's a place where I've really come full circle and actually changed my thoughts and sodium. But the food piece and the fueling piece are that's going to make or break your day. So start now working on how you can train your gut better, how you can maximize what works for you, what doesn't work. There's a lot of great resources out there. And nobody has the answer. And what works for your best friend, Susie, isn't necessarily going to work for you. So you have to try. I've got athletes out there right now that have just ordered 4 different things.
Right.
So
yep. Yep.
I'm doing it too.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
I think it's interesting that you pointed out the World Championships in Budapest, because we see these professional athletes, these elite athletes doing something. And it's like, if you think about it as simply as these people are the most successful at this, why aren't we doing what they do? Why do we think we don't have to do the warm-up, or we don't have to do as much nutrition as they do? And if you dial it in as simple as that, it's like, oh, we do. If we want to perform, we have to do that. So let's talk hydration.
Hydration. So our hydrated cells perform. They do their job. Period, guys. And so we need the hydration for our body to do the job, for blood oxygen to muscle, for our brain to function and make the right decisions, for all of the above. And the piece where I've really changed quite a bit is also on sodium and understanding, you know, there's so much out there over the years that we've heard, salt's bad, don't salt.
Right.
And we actually need salt, we need sodium. Sweat rate is a great, you know, if you can, there are pretty easy ways to do this, to do it yourself. So you can practice that, but you can know that if you're out there on a hot day and you're sweating profusely, I just did a couple sweat tests on some of my athletes, but you're seeing white. You need more sodium. But we all need it, and particularly on a hot day. And so again, to practice, you know, are you going to take, I encourage my athletes to carry a handheld, to carry it with an electrolyte mix in it. You know, there are various levels, you know, is it appropriate for you to be on something like a Noontab, which is 300 milligrams of sodium, or are you better off in something like an Element or a Precision that is going to give you, or a Scratch that is going to give you 1,000 or 1,500? If your race is hot, are you hyperhydrating in the week or days leading in? Can make or break your race? Are you taking a high level electrolyte the night before? I highly recommend that you do this. But again, these are all things that you have to train yourself to do. You know, Element is a very salty drink. So you have to, you know, but you can also salt your food, and we can talk about carb loading and, you know, all of that. But making sure that you're getting the hydration that you need, which really for most people is a minimum of somewhere between 12 and 24 ounces per hour. And for some it's more. If you want to complete, that's one thing. If you want to, I'll say compete or find your best or race for performance, I'll call it race for performance, then you do not want to drop body weight during the marathon. So,
right.
Yeah.
Via dehydration.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You do not want to drop by. So if you think, again, if you sort of simplify it and think about it like that, You want to make sure when you go out for a run and you don't take in fuel, which, by the way, the carbohydrate is retaining water and so forth, and you don't take in fluids, you're going to come back and you're going to get on the scale and you're going to be 1-2 pounds lighter or, you know, whatever. You don't want that right. if you're racing for performance.
I feel like a lot of the adages that we've been bombarded with, like through maybe mass media, that you know, we need, you know, lower salt for blood pressure or for a lot of just general concepts just do not apply to runners and like some of those specific things. Just,
yeah,
it's so, I guess, like when I heard that maybe in college or something, it just completely reframed my thought process towards nutrition. It's like the things that I've been told may not be true as they are towards runners specifically.
Well, in our podcast with Ashley, she's one of our nutritionists on staff at Performance, and she even mentioned that runners should, when you're preparing food at home, often runners aren't even putting enough salt in their food when they're cooking. So salt your food. When you go out to a restaurant, you can pretty much guarantee it's going to have a lot of food in it. But for someone who's sweating in the summer months, add a little bit more. Don't be afraid of that salt. Add a little bit of that salt. She encourages it to people. And this isn't nutritionist. This is her expertise.
Let's switch directions just a little bit, just for making sure that we still touch on some of the other pieces as well. So next, let's go through stress management a little bit and some things that you've worked well for you either before races, throughout your life. What are some tools that you've implemented specifically for that?
And I think we can include in this, unless you guys don't want to, injury. Injury is stress and how you manage trying to avoid and coming back from it.
I think the best way to manage anxiety and stress is actually to focus on your controllables and breathe. As it relates to injury, I always say stay present. What can I do today? And find gratitude in that and maybe make a gratitude list. During that period, also recognize the progression and give yourself a pat on the back. A couple weeks ago I wasn't running. And then I was running. So those kinds of things. But, sometimes you're beginning with, in the boot, on the crutches, whatever. And I've been there. The fact that I can breathe means there's more right than wrong. So I sort of like to start there when things are imploding around and your race is pulled and life is over and it's really not. But it feels like it. And something that's so important to us and something that is not only important to us, but it's something that is physical and emotional. And it's something that we runners understand that we need. And so when it's taken away, it's very difficult, mostly more emotionally. It also becomes isolating.
Yeah.
So I say, and a great resource is to get into PT. So I'm down at Performance and I'm amongst all these people. I love to hear from my athletes and friends what they're doing and sort of live vicariously through them. And I like to, see that, I can do seated leg lifts. Next week, I'm doing weighted seated leg lifts. And, the following week, I'm doing single leg bridges. And, but you've got to look at that in a very, it's a mindset.
Here and now, right?
Yeah, of being very present and also giving yourself grace, but also giving yourself credit,
right?
Credit for the little things, and that all of it is building towards getting back to what we love to do.
Yeah.
So it's not a chore. It actually excites me because it's going to bring me back. And so I'm a huge proponent of being out. If you can't run, maybe you can bike with your friends. You know, if you can't run and you can't bike, maybe you can have coffee with them after their run. You know, you don't, the worst thing you can do is isolate yourself. The best thing you can do is care, get under the proper team and management to help you, and then do the work. So often we come into PT and we do it, and then we go home and we don't do what we're supposed to do. And, you know, it's really just taking that time. I mean, I take 25 minutes a day between a pre-activation and sort of a post-run, you know, stretching. You know, it's 5 to 10 minutes in one activity and 5 to 10 in another. And, you know, and then dynamic drills between my warm-up and my quality work. And it's become sort of meditative. Mm-hmm. So doing that and then bringing that to race day. So asking about, you know, anxiety, you know, sort of falling into, you know, when I'm in Staten Island, you know, sitting down and doing the work that I need to do in doing my dynamics. And I slow them down because you're there for a long time. And I do them, you know, usually I do a count of 12 and I have a routine and I might do a count of 20. But it brings me back to a place that's familiar. It brings me to a place of I can, I'm ready, I'm here, I'm healthy. I believe a lot in having visualization, having a plan, having a coach and a partner, having mantras. I'm a firm believer in understanding your course. If you can have support at places that you need it, that's great. If you can sort of identify those, I can tell you Fifth Avenue in New York is a really great place to have your family and friends. So, you know, all of those kinds of things become really, really important. Stepping on a starting line with a couple of things is something that I try to do, which is gratitude that I'm there, because I don't always get there. Yeah. So gratitude that I'm there. Hope is amazingly powerful. I hope that I can run for a long time. Okay. I hope that I can do it with people that matter. I hope that I can chase world and American records, but it's all hope.
Heck yeah.
It's all hope. It's all hope. Peace. Have peace in what you're doing. And that's when you just sort of, you know, you take a breath. Remove anything that is, I'm hesitating with what's the right word. Remove distraction, remove negative energy. And sometimes that's family and friends. Distractions, I would say, is your phone. If you've prepared, and this is a goal race, make sure you're not in a city with family and friends and going out all night. And I don't mean all night, but just, you know, hopping around and touring and, stay off your feet. Do that after. If you need to remove people that don't lift you up, find a way, self-advocate, remove yourself. I do that. My family's in Boston. I stay with my family. They're a large part of how and why I do what I do. But I need to remove myself 24 hours before. And I go out closer to the start by myself with my husband and pay for a room to do that. So that's my self-advocating for myself and what my needs are. And I just chill on a bed with compression boots and eat a lot of white rice and sweet potatoes and a little bit of protein. It's pretty simple. Again, so, you know, and a carb load. You don't need to eat more. You just need to mix, you know, the content needs to change. So fibers and fats come down and carbohydrates come up. They become 2/3 of the plate, but put a little protein on there. You're going to need it. So
it sounds like if you practice everything and you trust what you've done, then you can make it to the starting line in peace if everything goes correctly, right? Because it doesn't always. I've missed races, you've missed races, but it's practice what you're going to do day of, and you'll be ready to get there, right?
Yeah.
Well, the last pillar is exercise, and we sure don't need to ask you about exercise. We know what you're doing, so let's get to some fun stuff.
Yep, let's do it.
So what is, if you have one, what is your most memorable race moment?
In race?
Or after? Or before? Something to do with a race. Positive, memorable, also positive.
I think my that's hard to say. Crossing Boston's finish line in a year ago in 2022, taking Joan Benoit Samuelson's course record.
Yeah, you did.
Running 7 minutes faster than I'd ever run on that course. After a year and a half of injury and 7 months of not running because of the care that you guys gave me and working with a dietitian and a team of people, nailing my carb loading, doing all the things. As I said earlier, I think prehab is as important as, you know, as PT. Making sure hands are on you. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds a little weird, but you know, soft tissue work is is really, really important. So in the context of what had gone on in the year and a half leading up to that, not actually being able to run even a 9 or 10 pace in January leading into that race. And my largest memory is really calling my coach at the end of March. I was up doing a training run on the course, and I called him and said, "We can go to Boston."
That's amazing.
Yeah, I had a run where I knew it was a 9+4 with a mile and a half recovery in between the two, and my recovery was, I don't know, it was 10 or 12 seconds off marathon pace.
Okay.
And I just, you know.
You felt it.
So that's a big, you know, the recovery piece is, recovery intervals is really an important piece in your marathon training. So running marathon effort versus pace is really important. Don't get into goal. Don't get into chasing somebody else's. Don't get into your ego. Don't get into any of that shit. Run effort. Understand what effort is and whether you can maintain it for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, whatever that is for you. And when you do that, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5 weeks out from your goal race, you should have a run where your recovery, whether it's your 4x whatever, your 3x whatever, whatever that is that you're doing, your recovery should feel smooth.
Yep.
It should feel like just stepping off the gas a little is enough.
Yeah.
Whatever that is for you. I'll tell you, largely it's 45 to 60 seconds. It's maybe not, you know, but for me it's under 30 and then I know, but largely for most people it's 45 to 60. Then you're ready to go. And then you just need to be really fucking smart for the next 3 weeks. You just need to be real. So you just need to be really, really smart. Don't overdo. Everybody wants to win. I emphasize this. I think it's Strava. I don't know. I think it's part of our personality as runners. But you don't win workouts.
No.
You don't want to leave your. You guys don't want to leave your race in Connecticut. It's got to go to New York.
I left Berlin in Connecticut.
Yeah.
I left it in Connecticut. Learned the lesson.
Yeah, don't do that. And then control your controllables and relax. The weather is going to be what the weather is, and you need to adjust. I saw that in Budapest. So they ran
last year.
Their 5K, the top 10 ran their 5K 30 to 40 seconds, their first one, slower than their last one.
Wow.
Okay, that's huge margin. So you need to trust and have patience and control to run a marathon. There is no banking time. But in bad weather, you need to adjust and run for your best on the day. Run for place. Everybody has the same weather. Throw the time out.
That's a good one. Everyone has the same weather.
Everybody has the same weather. Yeah. Run for place. In Boston's case, run for your bib.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can look at your bib placement at the end. There's so many ways to look at this, but don't chase a goal time. You know, I have athletes that, you know, for Boston or for New York, it would be, you know, I call it the 59th Street Bridge. I think it has a new name now. I don't want to doubt myself,
age myself. On 59th Queens, Street.
Okay. So that bridge, you know, you're just a little over, you know, half of you're coming on to First Avenue. You don't want to run too fast to that bridge.
Nope.
You do not want to run too fast to Wellesley. Yeah. If you do that, you die. Mm-hmm. You die. And you don't want to do that. So the way you don't warm up for a marathon. You do drills. You don't run.
Yep.
You're not going to be able to in Staten Island. You can't move around. Same in Boston. But you know, so many people make the mistake that they think they have to go out and do a warm-up run. Your first 5K is your warm-up.
Right.
Yep. Ease into it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you're running 30 to 40 seconds slower unless weather is an issue.
Right.
But it does mean that you're running maybe 10, 12, 15 seconds and ease into it. You should be at marathon pace by the 5K.
No, this is still fun questions.
Okay.
What's your favorite fuel source mid-run? Like the lesser of all
sweet potatoes?
Evils.
No, bacon. I use Ucan, I use Morton, and I use Precision.
So you do three?
Yeah, it depends on the race and the weather, and you know, again, they have different. The content is different in each of them.
Right.
So, you know, some have sodium, some don't. You know, it's just so depending again on weather, you know, what the course is. Again, fuel consumption should be in race. It should be at marathon pace effort, which means if you're coming up the 59th Street Bridge or you're coming up Fifth Avenue, you do not want to be gelling. Want to gel on the backside. You do not want to be gelling when your heart rate is elevated and your effort, even though your pace is slowed to climb, you're at a higher effort. Mm-hmm. So be very careful. People make a lot of mistakes. So again, on the timing, the miles or whatever, it's time to gel. Well, you know what? Wait 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And get on the back.
Worth it.
Get on the backside of that hill.
So you've touched on don't race for just an arbitrary goal time. You've touched on a million things. Let's say it's our listener's first marathon. What's your golden piece of advice?
Get to the start healthy.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And finish and have fun.
Yeah. Build a team that will get you to the start healthy. We don't do this alone.
Correct. And that summarizes exactly why we had the queen herself on this episode. Heather, thank you so much for joining us. You are a pleasure. You are a beast. You are a force. I can't wait to see what's in the future for you.
It's so much fun to be here. I love you guys.
We love you too. All right. Marathon Mondays, we're out. Good luck, everyone.
Have fun.